Hello again, and welcome to Sonnet 73, where we discuss elder law issues of the day and special needs matters. I'm David Slonim, host of this podcast and owner of Slonim Law, a law firm based in Melbourne, Florida, focusing on the very same matters we're discussing today. Today, I'm speaking with Jennifer Helen. Jennifer is the owner of Seniors Helping Seniors, which is a non-medical in-home assistance service that utilizes caregivers 50 and over to provide in-home care and assistance to other seniors requiring help with some of their activities of daily living. She is a certified dementia practitioner, has her master's from the University of Central Florida, and has been a resident of Brevard County for 21 years. She's also involved in many senior-related organizations in the community and is the vice president of the Space Coast chapter of the Florida State Guardian Association.
Hey, Jennifer, how are you doing today?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I am well. Glad to have you here. And just for our listeners, this is Jennifer Helen, who is here with me. Did I say that right?
You did. Very good. Yes. Some people try to make it more complicated, but it's two girls' names, Jennifer Helen.
Oh, excellent. Yes. Yeah, like Helen, like with an E, except with an I, right?
Yes.
Okay. And Jennifer, you are the owner of Seniors Helping Seniors.
Yes.
And how long have you been the owner of that company?
9 years will be 10 years next year.
Okay. And you're a co-owner, in fact. Is that right?
I am. My mom and I started it back in 2012. She is primarily retired, but she still does come into the office for some of the fun things.
That is wonderful to have a mom-daughter relationship there. And hopefully that goes well most of the time.
Yes, most of the time. We are family. So, yeah, there are challenges that come along with that, right. But there's a lot of good as well.
Yeah. That's a great thing to be able to have that. So it's so what is Seniors Helping Seniors?
Just the way it sounds, we really do hire seniors to go out and help other seniors. We are in Florida. We are a homemaker companion. That's our licensing. So we do all of the little things around the house that need to be done on a day-to-day basis that people might have some challenges with. So transportation, light housekeeping, meal preparation, a lot of dementia care, respite care, companionship, anything non-medical that a senior might need.
So when you say non-medical, on the legal side, that just means you're not doing anything where you're providing medication. Are you doing any medication work? You're not lifting them or moving the individuals in any way, is that correct?
Right. We're not helping in the bathroom or in the shower. We can give a medication reminder, but we can't dispense medications. Or we're not doing any of that medical bandaging, wound care, things like that.
Right. Okay. So, but your seniors can go and get the groceries or perform respite services and other things like that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Take them out, clean the house, help with organization, meal preparation. Anything that we do also has a huge companionship piece. Even if we're there to clean, there's still a companionship piece with it.
Right.
So that's always a good thing.
And how many seniors do you have employed?
We have about 80 right now.
Okay. And that's throughout all of Brevard County, or does that go beyond that?
All of Brevard County. And we are such a long county that, you know, we don't send our seniors too far away from where they live. So if we've got seniors up in Titusville, we keep them up in Titusville. And that's why we do have such a large number, because we go from MIMS all the way down to MICO.
And the seniors, how old are they who are going in and doing the caregiving?
Good question. Not that I think this is a senior, because I'm there, but we go with AARP, 50 and over.
Okay.
So we do have some young, you know, 50s, but our oldest provider right now is 84, and he can run circles around me. So.
So he just goes out and does everything that we talked about before for the clients?
He is amazing. I talk about Harry quite a bit because he has, he volunteers at the cath lab at Holmes Regional pre-COVID a couple of days a week, 5 a.m. to about 11. Okay. He every Friday delivers medications for hospice. He volunteers there. And then every evening he takes care of a gentleman for us, makes sure he has dinner, walks the dog, makes sure everything is organized, ready for the next morning. So he is just an amazing person, full of energy.
What is a prime motivator for many of your seniors?
For him, he was a widower. Uh-huh. And he took care of his wife for years, so he knew he had that caregiving background and experience, and he wanted to help other people. You know, he didn't want to sit at home and do nothing. He really wanted to stay active and engaged, and you really look at him and you can tell that he is. He has done that.
One thing I've found in talking to clients of mine that have cared for their parents or siblings or whatever the case may be, were their care provider, and they've done it for years and years. Once that person passes away, then they feel like there is a hole, like they need to continue to do that potentially.
And exactly.
There's one individual that I'm thinking of that she was a paralegal for many years. And then after she finished caring for her parents, then she ended up becoming a professional guardian and to make sure that she continues that caregiving for others. And I thought that was a really interesting transition. From one kind of entirely, you know, different job to that one. And I think you just go with your heart sometimes.
Exactly. And they make the best caregivers because they've been there, they've done that with a family member, they've got a lot of compassion, and they've got a lot of knowledge. So being able to share that with another senior is really helpful. And that the client appreciates, too, because it's not some young person coming in and playing with their phone. It's someone a little closer in age coming in. It's sometimes, if it's the first time they've had help in the house,
right,
it's a little easier to take.
Right.
Coming from someone who is closer in age and is compassionate, and they, you know that they're there because they want to be there. It makes a big difference.
And so, you know, that's something that I've seen going into individuals' homes when I see care providers there, is that sometimes those care providers are just sitting on the couch, and you know, it doesn't appear like they're doing a whole lot to interact with the person having the care provided, you know, being given, I suppose.
Right, they're not engaged.
They're not engaged, and you know, being on the phone is a big thing, and that's a personal pet peeve of mine.
Mine too.
so you know, I can definitely relate to that, and I think that there's so much interaction that can still be had, and there was one client that I just met with the other day, and she was talking to me, and she was really quite with it, and she was in her mid-70s, and she was a former CPA and had all these accounting things back, you know, in her background. And she was telling me about the several husbands that she had to, you know, put in the ground and things like that. And now she's experiencing life anew, basically on her own, after her last husband died of COVID you know, the other diseases that he had cancer as well and a few other things there, but COVID was the one that really did him in. And she was relating how she had a really tough life overall. And now in her 70s, now she's able to go out and do these things on her own without the need for kind of caring for anybody there. So I imagine that some of your care providers are kind of in the same boat a little bit. They just want to be out there, and this is their way of giving back,
right,
at least some of the time.
And it's they get to use all of that experience that they've gained, but yet it's very flexible. So, you know, for that person that you were talking about, she gets to go and use those skills, but yet she gets to go back at home at night and you know, go out on Tuesdays and Thursdays and have her own thing going on. So I think they really appreciate that they still get to live their life, but they get to help people too. They get both sides, which is great.
Do some of your caregivers, when they come in to help somebody and they have a skill set like accounting or something else, do they talk to the individuals and kind of say, okay, I can help you with doing your bills or anything like that? Or are they not allowed to do that?
About the bill paying because we want to make sure that there's no impropriety at all, you know. And so banking, things of that nature, we might help them stay organized and remind them that, hey, it's the day to pay bills. It's very common for us to try to get rid of the junk mail and just put out what's very important in front of them. But we do try to be very careful about helping people write checks because we don't want to cross that line. There is so much fraud, unfortunately. People take advantage, and we don't want to ever go there. So we're very careful about that.
Yeah. So there's the opportunity for the exploitation or financial abuse is definitely kind of ripe there.
Unfortunately, yes. So we if we notice someone is having a hard time with bill paying, we'll contact the family. And then, of course, there are people like you. There are case managers who will just help with that fiduciary part. So we'll ask somebody else to come in and help if the family is unable.
Right.
Typically, the family will step in. But if there isn't family, then we need to look elsewhere to bring in that piece. Because we don't, you know, if I can write a check, I could pay myself. And that definitely would be a conflict of interest. So we're very careful about that.
So when people call you, do you do a check to see if they have capacity in any way, or is it the family members who call you, or is it the individuals that say, I need help, or how does that come about there?
It's about 60 to 70% the kids calling us, but that other 40% is the seniors themselves. So we do go out and do an assessment.
Right.
And if we have any inkling that there could be dementia, we do try to talk to the family because we want to get a well-rounded picture of that person. Do they have capacity? And if they don't, who is power of attorney? Who's got some decision-making capabilities for that person?
Right. Yeah, you definitely open the door to the legal side of the estate planning
directives
there. And those advanced directives are super important. And, you know, as I've said before, I don't do these documents for estate planning purposes. I call them life planning purposes. And so basically these documents are good, the advance directives being, you know, the power of attorney, the healthcare surrogate, the living will, and even a preneed guardian declaration. These documents need to get done while you have capacity to allow somebody to act in case you don't.
Right.
And so, you know, with the power of attorney, it's really tricky because that document in Florida anyway, once you sign it, it's effective. So even if you don't, even if you have capacity, rather, that person that's your agent in the document can act. So I don't know if you've had experience sometimes of having the kids who are the agents, you know, acting on behalf of mom or dad, then they're able to contract with you and do everything else with their parents just being provided for, essentially.
Yes. Yes, that's very common where the kids will bring us in. The daughter will have power of attorney and say, you know, mom needs extra help. And of course, here in Florida, I think it's even to a higher degree because we have so many seniors that retire here, but the kids are in California, New York.
Right.
And so they're as power of attorney coming in and saying, hey, I've got to get someone else in here to help mom on a day-to-day basis.
Right, right. And then you know, that power of attorney is limited to legal and financial matters. And then do you ask for a healthcare surrogate as well? Or is that something that you really don't get into?
We ask who that is because even though we don't do any of the medical, we're still there and we're eyes and ears on the ground. And again, the daughter might be up in New York. So we want to know if there is an emergency, if something medical does happen, who do we point to? Because that person may not be able to do that for themselves. So we need to make sure that everyone knows, hey, the son is power of attorney and medical care surrogate. He's got decision-making capabilities if mom is not able
right.
to. And that's really important to know exactly who that is and what to do. We just had to call a grandson this week. He's got power of attorney over grandma and... who would that be to him? Her son. She's got an adult son with disabilities. So he is over both of them.
Wow,
unfortunately, one had to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And so we instantly called and said, hey, I don't know if anyone's called you yet, but this is what's going on. And so he flew right in to make sure that things were taken care of. But it's wonderful to be able to call and say, hey, this is what's going on and know that it's being taken care of. in the instances where we don't have that, who talks for that person? Mm-hmm. And that's scary.
So a couple of things. You know, first, that reminds me of a phrase called the sandwich generation, right?
Yes.
So, you know, people that are caring for their kids and also caring for their parents, they're, you know, they're the I guess, two pieces of the sandwich, and then caring for everybody in between, whatever. This guy sounds like a club sandwich kind of situation.
Oh, almost, caring, you're right.
You know, for both dad and grandparent there as well.
Yeah.
So that's pretty rough. What I've done sometimes in my healthcare documents is to have an emergency healthcare surrogate. So basically we have a temporary healthcare surrogate that is local until the person that may be named as a healthcare surrogate otherwise, who would be remote, maybe if they're living in California or elsewhere, takes some time to get here, but we may want somebody with boots on the ground so that way they can make immediate decisions while they're in the air or whatever else like that.
And I think that's, you make a very good point there, because again, here in Florida, so many of the kids are not local.
Right.
So it is good to have somebody who can make a quick decision right now while that person is flying in from California.
Right.
So I do think that's something that probably a lot of us don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are definitely circumstances where that would arise and be needed.
So having good legal documents is important to make sure that that's in place,
it
right?
really is. And again, you know, we're home care. We really don't do anything with that. But when we go into the assessment, we'll ask, do you have a power of attorney?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have medical surrogate? Have you done advanced directives? We're really not going to do anything with that. You know, it's kind of none of our business, but at the same time, it is, because we know in different circumstances that we've, you know, been through how important those documents are.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're going to be your eyes and ears, we want to make sure that we're pointing at the right people when that time comes. You know, hopefully it never does, but if it does, then we want to make sure we're giving the right information.
I think it's just good planning at a certain stage in life to do that. Unfortunately, the surveys have shown that most people don't want to do any estate planning until they do get older, because they just don't believe that mortality is going to catch up with them. And, you know, what I also find is I've had people tell me, I don't need to do some of these advanced directives because I will know when I don't have capacity anymore. Right. And you know, the reality is, unfortunately, sometimes it's a gradual process. Sometimes it can be overnight.
Right.
And you don't have that time to spare to necessarily do these things. And you know, it's wonderful, though, when you do know that you're kind of losing your grip sometimes on capacity, but it's not often that actually occurs like that necessarily.
And it could be a sudden thing, like you said. You know, there could be an accident tomorrow and I can't make decisions anymore for myself, and who is going to do that?
And sometimes it's a physical event. Like I've heard of some clients who have fallen and broken their hip, have to go to the hospital, and it's because of surgery or some other situation, then they come out with some version of dementia.
Right.
Or incapacity, at least, if not, we don't want to call it dementia exactly, unless we have a diagnosis on that. But, you know, these are the kind of things where you don't know what's going to happen, and these sorts of documents are in place to safeguard, be a safety net, really. And so and if those documents aren't there, then the only alternative in Florida, as you know, is a guardianship. And so that can become really traumatic for a family, especially if they're remote.
Oh, absolutely.
To then come in and kind of start a guardianship process for somebody. And it's just a few hundred dollars to get some of these documents done. So it just boggles my mind why, you know, those aren't done. How often, when you meet with a client and do the initial interview, do you think on a percentage basis that they have the estate planning documents or it overall done?
I'm seeing more and more, you know, even over the 10 years that we've been in business, I'm seeing more have them, thank goodness.
Yeah.
But we still definitely have, I would say, at least 25% that have not done anything.
So,
you know, there's nothing in place.
Yeah. So when you are in that interview and you ask, you know, why, do you ask why, or you just kind of check the box and you move on?
No, I will advise them that they really need to have that done.
Yeah.
Because of circumstances, you know, and I'll tell them, we've seen what happens when someone doesn't have these documents in place and what it does to the person and what it does to the family. So we really advise you, there's wonderful elder attorneys here in Brevard County. I'll advise them not to just go to, you know, Mr. Smith down the street, go to an elder attorney who specializes in this, because it's complicated. You know, if you've got a BMW, and you want to take care of it, you go to someone who knows how to fix BMWs. You don't go to the Ford place.
Right.
So you really do want to go to an elder attorney to get that taken care of. There's a lot of wisdom in that. We've seen that through the years. And we really encourage them. We'll give them the resources. You know, we can't make them do it, but we will really highly recommend they get that paperwork in order. You know, and I'll tell them, I don't have to see it. I don't have anything to do with it. But it really protects you. And typically while I'm there, and it makes the senior feel good, I will look at the kids and say, you too. Do you have your paperwork done?
Right.
And they'll kind of look at me like, oh no, you know, wait a minute. We're not part of this. Oh, yes, you are. How old are you? Because the kids are typically 40s, 50s, 60s, it's important for you to have those documents as well.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll pick on both fairly.
That's funny. Yeah, you know, we're coming into the fall season and everybody's starting to think about the holiday time. And, you know, one thing I tell families is that, you know, this makes a good Christmas gift. You know, kind of half tongue in cheek that, you know, having the kids going to get this done and paying for it for them or whatever. Or helping them with it, or you know, whatever would not be seen as kind of supporting that in a way that would be unduly influencing them, of course. Right. So I want to make sure I get that on record. but you know, helping them do that is really important. So you have, I've had generations of you know families coming in to do that, and that's a great thing to see because it really shows that they're really planning. And the you know the reality of life is that you never know, right?
Exactly.
So better to at least have this done and then just go on with your life. It's just one less thing to worry about.
Well, it's peace of mind.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a fun process, but it's necessary.
What are you talking about? Yeah.
Okay, your office is fun, but but you know people don't want to think about death and oh, something happens to me and I can't make decisions. You know that part is not fun to put your head around. And oh gosh, who is that person that I trust to make my medical decisions? Because sometimes it's not always a family member.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, that, but once you have that done, it's definitely a big sigh of relief. And okay, I know that my kids know exactly what I want.
Yeah.
And they know how to take care of it and it's all done. And now, yes, we can go on and.
Unfortunately, you know, as you said, there's a lot of seniors that come into Florida and their families are not here. And so I have seen many a case where my clients are sitting here and they say, I don't know who to name. I have friends around here, but, you know, do I want to give them that sort of burden to be my surrogate or agent or whatever the case may be? And, you know, it's a real tough choice for some people. And I think that that keeps some from doing it at all.
Yes.
Just and the idea of just, you know, I don't want to think about that.
That brings to mind, now my sister and her husband never had children. So there are a lot more couples, and I think we're going to see a lot more of that as time goes on, where people don't have big families, they never had children. And then what do they do? Okay, who... As they get older, who is going to be healthcare surrogate for them?
Right.
Now, I'm the younger sister, so it will be me. But if something happens to me, does it go to my sons? And, and you know, they're right now, I would say they're too young for that to make those types of decisions for someone. So, again, that goes back to people don't do it because they don't even know who to name. But it's really important that they do have someone that they feel comfortable with, you know, that will make those decisions for them. And again, peace of mind, God forbid they're in an accident, something happens. My sister and brother-in-law love to travel. So if they're in Europe and something happens, who speaks for them? How do we negotiate all of that?
Yeah.
So it's important to have all of those pieces into place.
Right. And I think sometimes a family of choice can be better than the family by blood anyway. And so, you know, that would be something to always think about. And, you know, I call it the uncomfortable dinner conversation. You know, you really want to bring this up. If it's not with your family, then with your friends or whatever, just say, hey, I was thinking about doing this. Would you be open to being my surrogate or my agent and whatnot? And most of the time, you'd probably be pleasantly surprised to find that they're okay with that.
Now, I have a question for you, and this just came up this week. Can someone come in and do a power of attorney and that person not know that they've been named?
Sure.
That's what I thought. Okay. Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, you can name the President of the United States if you wanted to. You know, that doesn't mean they'll accept, right?
Right.
But you can nominate, you know, anybody or appoint, and, you know, in some documents like a will, you're nominating the person to be your personal representative. It's ultimately the judge who's going to sign the order appointing that person. But with the advance directives, you're actually appointing those people to act in that. And that's why you want to have alternates in place as well.
Just in case. So that brings my second question. If that person, having no clue that they were named power of attorney, if they come to them, can that person say, no, I don't accept this?
Absolutely.
And do they have any legal obligation?
Nope.
Okay.
No. So they're just named on there, and, you know, kind of shame on the people to make the document and not name them, but it's kind of a bombshell when that occurs. I haven't seen that too much in my history of doing this.
Thank goodness. But we do have some very stubborn seniors out there, so.
Yeah.
I think in this circumstance, they did the paperwork but didn't want to let any family know.
Right.
And still really haven't.
Yeah. So when there
isn't. It makes it a little interesting then to plan for the family because they really don't know which one of them actually is.
So one alternative that I've counseled a lot of clients in that respect is when they don't know who they want to name, they don't have family or they don't like their family or don't, whatever the case may be, or they don't want to ask their friends, then let's talk about a professional person coming in. So I work with a lot of professional guardians, and sometimes what we'll do is, as it's not in a guardianship role, but as a case manager or something else, then we'll meet ahead of time and say, okay, well, do you like this person? Do you think that this is going to be a person that, you know, you can have your things managed by? And of course, in a professional role, and there's going to be some fees involved and things, so we talk about that, you know what that's going to be. And again, it's not under the guardianship side, but it's just going to be as in a other professional manner. And that's worked pretty well in the past to have that alternative option there.
So, I do recommend that a lot. I don't know if you know, I'm the vice president now of the Florida State Guardianship Association.
Are you?
The,
I do not.
The Space
yes.
Coast chapter.
Yeah.
Yes. Because I do really believe in that. And I think it goes back to the fact that my brother-in-law and my sister don't have children. What are they going to do? And there's so many couples like that. And I do recommend, you know, case management. It might not ever go into guardian, but for those folks that are here and the kids are off somewhere else,
right.
Having that boots on the ground here mm-hmm. would really help.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially when there's an estranged family member or family members.
And that happens a lot.
More than we'd like to admit,
yes.
I think. So, yeah, not everybody gets along with one another. So having that professional side is really important to be able to have as an option. So I'm glad we're able to cover that a little bit.
Yes, well. And just to talk about the professional guardians, because I have been around quite a few of them as well, and the folks that I know through the FSGA are, you know, amazingly wonderful, compassionate people. They do a lot of continuing education. They're very fiduciary minded. They report. I don't think the average person, I know I had no clue when I started, how much they report, you know, to the state, and how much they're held accountable. So the kind of the nightmare stories that you hear really are far and few between.
And the last couple of years have had this explosion of quote-unquote nightmare stories that have really put guardianship in a poor light, I think.
Exactly.
Which is untrue for the most part. I mean, there are going to be some bad apples here and there. We've experienced those, but it's so rare. And I think most of the professional guardians love what they do. They're exhausted by it.
Oh, you could pay me to be one, very honestly.
But they really do. I mean, it's amazing that, you know, these are people that are literally on call 24/7, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, you know, for these clients. And they do it because they love to help like that.
Exactly.
And that's it.
I hate to see that reputation tarnished for one or two bad apples, because really they are overall very good people, very conscientious, very caring.
Right. And in fact, you can go to the FSGA website, right?
Yes.
And then do a search for guardians as well. And that'll show also some of their histories and things like that, if I'm not mistaken, whether or not they're properly licensed and whatnot, right?
Right.
So that's important for people to do, looking at guardianships there.
Yes, I do recommend it.
Speaking of licensed, I think one thing that you're seeing now is, because of COVID and post-COVID, you're seeing some differentiation in the marketplace as far as care providers, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
And it's we were talking a little bit before about that. There are so many seniors here. There's definitely enough to go around.
Okay, yes.
And we work really well with a lot of other companies because we don't do the hands-on. But what we're starting to see now is there's a huge demand for home care. There's an increased demand since COVID for home care. People a little hesitant to go into an assisted living facility because of the lockdowns that happened. So now we're seeing this huge increase. So we're seeing more and more people getting into the home care business, either sole proprietors or, you know, new businesses. And I want to caution people to be very careful to make sure that they are working with a licensed, bonded, insured company that has their ducks in a row. And you do want to make sure that you can go on AHCA's website, the Agency for Healthcare Administration, and look to see, are they licensed? What is their licensing? Have they had any complaints? Because we want to serve the seniors, but we also want to make sure that they're being served in the correct way and not being taken advantage of, or not being, you know, we're Homemaker Companion. I don't hire CNAs or HHAs because we don't do any of the medical or the hands-on. So if I were to go out and do some hands-on services, my people aren't trained appropriately for that. You know, that would not be a good thing.
Right.
So we don't want people who are not trained in lifting or med management to go out and perform those duties for someone.
Right.
That could be a dangerous situation.
Somebody said, well, you know, my friend Paula down the street can come in and I can just pay her, you know, a little bit per week, and then she can do all of that. Is that a safe kind of companion to have then?
And we're seeing a lot of that because, again, there's the demand is there. So, I can do that cheaper.
Right.
But is it cheaper in the end if they've stolen everything in the house? And that's unfortunately one of the things that we have to be really careful of. And that we've seen historically, you know, unfortunately,
sure.
That
yeah.
There is a lot of fraud, elder abuse.
Exploitation. Neglect, right?
You know, here... everywhere. But again, here in Florida, because we do have so many seniors that retire here and the family's not here on a day-to-day basis looking over their shoulder to make sure that they're not being taken advantage of.
Right.
We had a client a couple of years ago. The kids were up in Canada and they had an adult daughter with disabilities. So they had an emergency with her. They weren't able to get down for about 2 years.
Oh, wow.
When they got down, those two caregivers, a housekeeper and a caregiver that were brought in, they were kind of off the street, not through an agency. There were no paintings in the house. This woman had been an opera singer in Europe. Statues, antique lamps, they were all gone. And nobody, of course, could tell them where they went. And everybody pointed at everybody else. And mom's dementia had progressed so that they didn't feel like they could put her on stand or through a deposition.
Right.
So no one was ever prosecuted.
Yeah.
So these people are out there doing it to someone else now.
Right.
And it was just such a sad situation, they brought us in because they said, we're not going to do that again. We're going to go through a company that, you know, we trust.
Right.
And so, of course, our folks, because we take that licensing very seriously, are background checked. You know, we do a lot of checks before we send someone out. And so that's why I encourage people to go through companies. It might be a few dollars cheaper to go through an individual, but you want to know who's in that house taking care of your mom.
Right. Now, you know, your companions, do they go through a training process? Is that something that is kind of when you hire them, then you do your background checks and other required, state-required checks and whatnot, but do you do other training beyond that?
Yes, we do have an orientation process that we go through, and we also have a 10-hour dementia class that we take our folks through. And it's geared towards our folks because we're not hands-on. It's really geared more towards the companionship behavioral part of dementia,
right.
the early to moderate stages, because we deal with that so much. We want them to be empowered to know how to handle things and to be comfortable with that.
Right. In 2021, do you find that there's more dementia, or do you think it's kind of leveled off? I hear that from different sources that it's kind of not as much of a spike as it was in the past years. Is that what you're finding, or are you?
What I'm finding is that the people who already had dementia because of COVID are a little bit worse.
Uh-huh.
And it's because of the isolation
right.
that occurred over the last year and a half.
Right.
Unfortunately, that change in structure, you know, the change in their daily routines, not being able to get out and socialize as much, people have, unfortunately, the dementia has progressed a little bit faster than maybe we would have seen before.
Hmm. So the socialization is really important.
It really is. It's one of those things. It's true. If you don't use it, you lose it.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's really important for people to keep getting out and keep being social. And if they were stuck in a room for the last year, then that's that's not helpful.
Well, that's pretty sad to see that that can happen like that. What can we do to ensure a good quality of life? Like, what can the families do to help plan to say, okay, well, we see mom or dad having a little bit of dementia or having some difficulty walking or not really quite hopping as far down the street or whatever, you know, the situation is. What steps do you think that they should take? And of course, I'm going to throw out the estate planning. But
of course. Well, and that's a big part of it. But I think really sitting down and having that conversation and being very open and honest about it is a very good thing. That, okay, yes, I want to stay in my home as long as possible. But at what point is that no longer possible? And let's talk about that. You know, if I become incontinent, if I become... if my memory deteriorates to a certain point, where is that line? I did this to my family one time. Who can tell me I can't drive? Who am I going to trust? I did that over dinner one time. I handed them a little contract that I had found online, just a little social experiment to see who would actually sign it, and not one of them did.
Right.
Yeah. But, and that shows the uncomfortableness of this conversation. We know that it's not an easy conversation to have, but it really has to happen because you want to plan ahead. If the goal is to stay at home, we need to look at, all right, let's install the grab bars. Really, maybe before I need them.
And that can be done free even. People don't know the resources that are available to
aging matters.
Exactly.
Yes,
right.
We don't. I have Handyman, but we don't use them for that. We will tell people, no. Go to Aging Matters. Use them for that, for the ramps, grab bars. They'll do a safety inspection of the house because a grab bar may not be just in the bathroom. It may be if you've got a sunken living room or you've got a house where there's a step down out into the garage, that may be where you need it.
Mm-hmm.
So looking ahead at the house and the layout, getting rid of the area rugs, getting rid of the clutter so that you have clear pathways to get around the house.
Yeah.
Looking at assisted livings. I think a lot of people still have that mindset of that it's a nursing home.
You're right.
It's a scary, smelly nursing home. And that's not what they are anymore.
Right.
So going out and looking to see what is out there, it will be less scary. if the time comes.
Those ALFs, or assisted living facilities, you have, you know, all sorts. Like, it's a whole spectrum. So you have some that are small care homes that are really just somebody's home, essentially, with a 6-bed limit, maybe, that they have people in there, and you get home cooked meals, you get those sorts of things. And then you go out to the, what I call the big box places, that are more like cruise ships.
Right,
you
know, resort style living.
Resort style, and they have everything from, you know, literally bars in there, and, you know, movie theaters, and all these other activities that then they get taken out to, as well as in having in the facility. So,
right.
I think it's not what it used to be in the, you know, 50s or whatever.
Exactly, and kind of knowing what those all look like, and knowing where your comfort level would be.
Right.
It's not to say that you have to move in tomorrow, but all right, we know now that mom looked at all of these and this was her favorite. So if the time comes, that would be her choice.
So I think the elephant in the room that's unspoken of so far is the financial planning that goes along with that. As well.
Absolutely.
Because you may want to have a really nice assisted living or independent living place, or living at home, and paying for, you know, seniors helping seniors, or some other in-home care provider, but that all costs money.
Right.
And so, you know, how much is that going to be? If a person doesn't have long-term care insurance to help with some of that, and long-term care insurance isn't for everybody, and it doesn't cover everything, right? It doesn't cover, I don't know if it covers what your service.
It depends on the way the policy is written. Mm-hmm.
Right, so there's different policies there, but, you know, it's a rare, I'd say probably 1 out of 10, 10% or so, have a long-term care policy in place.
I would agree with that.
And the rest of them, you're either paying out of pocket, or a family member is paying out of pocket. Or ultimately, there's hard decisions that have to get made, is that if you don't have a pocket big enough to pay for these things, then you have to sell the house or do other things like that to transition. We also, of course, assist clients with some Medicaid planning to do some of the in-home care, like the home and community-based services waiver, which, of course, we've got that waiting list, which we all love.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
Right. You know, but, you know, there are other alternatives out there that I think people need to plan for.
Absolutely.
As well. And you know, not everybody can afford some of the nicer places there. But I think that even so, with the right kind of planning, even if it requires some Medicaid involvement, then there can be some reasonable care that can be had, both in-home and in a type of facility.
And I think where we've seen a lot of that too, and I want to make sure I bring up a lot of folks, what's the spouse situation, husband and wife. I'll go back to my uncle. My aunt was diagnosed at 49, so she was very early onset Alzheimer's. She ended up classic Alzheimer's, you know, and ended up, he took care of her as long as he could, but she did have to go into a facility, and memory care is very expensive.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate that so that, you know, my uncle still has money to live on after she has gone? And
right.
That's, you come in very valuable there to know how to negotiate that. And people think that they have to go broke.
No, they don't. They don't have to get divorced. They don't have to go broke. You know, a good elder law attorney is going to be able to assist and figure out what is going to go to the community spouse and what's going to go to pay for a facility for the individual that would be needing those services there.
And that planning is priceless.
I like to think so.
But, it really is.
No, I've had many clients say it's the best, you know, money spent, because once you spend the money for the attorney for that, you're saving every month thereafter for, you know, after that you get the government benefits to help offset, whether it's the VA benefits or if it's going to be, you know, Medicaid, then those are other types of financial assistance that they wouldn't have known about or had otherwise.
Right.
And everybody does think I have to pay out of pocket and I've got to be broke. And that's really
not
true. The case.
So
right?
People really need to take advantage of your services for that, because I think that misconception is still out there.
Absolutely. But there's another misconception of the spouse that has to take care of their other spouse, right? So I had one scenario that I'll never forget. The husband was a CPA, and he was, you know, pretty with it. But his wife had significant dementia, and so he didn't want anybody else to help. Oh. It was just him and his wife, right? Which sounds great. But the problem was that one day she was falling. He tried to help her and stabilize her. He fell as well. They both ended up going to the hospital, and he died.
Oh.
And so then, of course, that's a worst case scenario, because then he's the caregiver that died. And so then the wife with dementia, and then what do you do? And so we had to get other family members involved to help with that until she ultimately passed away as well. But she was in, you know, she got discharged from the hospital eventually. But these are, you know, you can't just think this isn't going to happen.
Right.
And so, and we're not all superheroes. So it's just, there's a time when you just have to ask for help.
Absolutely. And that's, I will tell people that when they call and they've got a family member with dementia, whether you get help from us, someone else, a team of family and friends, have help. Mm-hmm. Don't do it by yourself, because logistically, you just can't.
Right.
You know, and they always say it takes a village to raise a child. Even more so with dementia. You really have to have a team of people with you, because it is exhausting.
And dementia is a tough disease, because most people don't understand it. They don't have the 10 hours of training, for example, which I recommend anybody go and get some sort of training if they have a family member with dementia.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not just like talking to, it's not normal forgettery. Right?
Right.
You know, it is, you have to meet that person where they are. And that's not always going to be just, oh, you know, didn't you remember we talked about this last week? You know, you can't get upset with them.
Right, and because so they don't remember.
They don't, right. It's not something they'll ever get better. It's just going to get worse on top of that.
Right, and they're not being manipulative. I hear that a lot. They don't remember. Sometimes the synapses are firing and they're good.
Yeah.
And then the next day they may not be. And it's not manipulation. It just is.
Right.
You know, it's the dementia.
I recently heard Tony Bennett was going through dementia.
Yes.
And Lady Gaga, I guess, is doing some shows with him in Las Vegas. And they had some other stuff. But she was saying in an interview that I heard that when he was singing, he was right on. He was able to recall everything. It was the old Tony Bennett. But as soon as he stops and gets off stage or off recording, then he needs a lot of assistance, and he's showing his age at that point then. So, you know, that's something that we see too, right, is that somebody can have that long-term recall, and then it's just like, oh, well, there's that person again, right?
Right.
And I think a lot of families hope that that is going to kind of go into other areas, but it's just kind of a narrow recall. And then, you know, that family member, the parent or grandparent or whatever it may be, needs a lot of help, more help than that individual can just give on their own.
Right, right. And if you've dealt with dementia and then another person in your family gets dementia, you think, okay, I know this. I've got this. I've done this before. But, they say in a lot of the dementia trainings, if you've seen one person with dementia, you've seen one person with dementia.
Yeah.
Everybody is different. There are some generalities, but everybody is different. So just because your other loved one did this, you know, grandma acted this way,
mm-hmm.
and she was the sweet little old lady, and, you know, she was just happily forgetful, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean mom is going to be the same way.
Right.
You know, mom may have a different type of dementia, and she might curse like a sailor.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's not that she means to, it's just that those are the special words that she was hidden away and she can access those.
Mm.
So it can be really interesting, you know,
oh, yeah.
dealing with someone with dementia. And it really, sometimes you have to tag out,
you know,
and having other people on your team will help you stay being a good caregiver to that person and give you backup if you need it.
What resources or team members would you say would be the most important? Let's just start with the top three and maybe go more if you have.
Well, you hit on one, making sure that you do get some education on dementia.
Mm-hmm.
Take advantage of any caregiving classes that they have. You know, we've got a lot of different resources here in the county through Joe's Club, through the Center for Family Caregivers.
It's not Joe's Club anymore, right?
I think they went back to Joe's Club. Joe's Club. I think they did. Oh, okay. They changed. I think they went back. Yeah. There are a lot of online resources too. I'm a huge fan of Tipa Snow. So she has got a website and she does a lot of YouTube videos.
Okay.
And she's got a very down-to-earth, kind of funny teaching style.
Right.
Okay. But she really gets to the heart of the matter of what is happening with the dementia, how to communicate. Really, really do suggest that, because the more you know, the better off you're going to be. Absolutely. So giving yourself some knowledge is the first step. And then building that family and friends part of the team, knowing that I'm closest, but, you know, my brother may be up in New York and he would be great at watching the online financial part. Mm-hmm. You know, he can overlook. He might not be able to be there day to day, but now that's part I don't have to worry about. He's doing the bill paying. He's doing, watching investments, whatever. You know, divvying that up so that you're not trying to do everything yourself. You know, bringing the family and friends in. Hey, can you go over on Tuesdays and take her for her hair appointment? You know, and then consider a agency, a company that can come in and help so that you can get time away. Having a backup is always a good thing. So definitely having a good group around you. But as if you said too, the other part of that is having that plan in place of, okay, we've gotten to the point where I can't take care of her safely at home. She does need to go into either an assisted living or memory care. How are we going to pay for that? How does that work? Having those plans in place so that you're making those decisions, you're making a thoughtful decision ahead of time instead of a panicked decision at the last moment.
Oh, yes. The crisis plans are the best slash worst, depending on how you look at that. And then, you know, on top of a good elder law attorney, for example, as a professional, then a good geriatrician, I think, is really important to bring into the mix. So, you know, I do want to stress that I don't have a medical degree, but it's really important to not just have a reliance on mom or dad's internist, but also somebody that specializes in this sort of care. And so, you know, in Brevard, again, we're really lucky, and in Orlando as well, to have really good geriatricians around. But that's something that you can't just rely on your standard family doctor. It has to be somebody that you take, and there may be a waiting list, right, for Dr. Visa or somebody else like that, but it's really important that they go and have that visit and have that assessment done there.
Oh my gosh, you're absolutely right. You know, and I guess maybe I take that for granted because it is so important. I'll give you an example. I had a former neighbor who was diagnosed with dementia by one of his doctors, mm-hmm. and told he had 5 years to live and walked away, really. It was not your typical diagnosis. It was just odd. And they came to me and said, Jennifer, I said, you know, I'm not medical either, but it doesn't sound right. I really want you to go and get a second opinion. You need to go to a specialist. Mm-hmm. You really need to look at that. He was extremely low in his Bs, vitamins.
Oh.
He gets a B shot twice a month.
Okay.
He's doing amazingly well. That's 7 years ago.
Yeah.
So here, you know, one doctor told him he was going to be dead in 5 years, and now it's going on 7 years. He has maybe a little bit of a memory problem, but he does not have dementia. And so I will use that with my clients a lot, that example, because you don't know. Mm-hmm. And a specialist can look at everything. And I've taken clients to Dr. Visa, and they did have memory issues. They did have a little dementia started, but because she could tweak the medications and the vitamins, and she looked at that whole picture,
right,
their memory scores jumped, mm-hmm. 20 points, and that's a huge increase. So going to somebody who really knows what they're doing, it's scary going to a dementia doctor.
Yeah.
But going in, getting a baseline, having them look at everything, you know, I would much rather have someone, you know, like my friend, he could have not done anything and been labeled dementia, and it would have been a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But because he did finally go and had that taken care of, how many more years, wonderful years, has he had? So I really, you're right. People need to go not just to a primary, but they really need to go to a specialist who understands the geriatric picture.
And looking at, you know, one thing you mentioned there was looking at the pharmaceuticals that they're taking, the medications. Have a real talk with a pharmacist, because sometimes when some person comes out of the hospital, the hospitalist is going to issue them some medications, and then they may be already on other medications, and then there's going to have some interaction that's just going to make everything worse. And I think it's important to, maybe a geriatrician is going to help review that, but also really sit down with the pharmacist and say, okay, what does this medication do? How does it interact with others there? And that could be, you know, world of difference as well, including B12 deficiency or other things like that.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm going to put my head in my hands for the moment. You know, we think that everybody's getting their medications through one pharmacy, because that would be ideal. And then the pharmacist can be looking as a second set of eyes over that list. However, mom and dad both hit the donut hole this year with their medications. Uh-huh. First time ever. Now, my mom is... she's a money person. Okay. So, if you don't know what the donut hole is, they've hit their allotted amount that, Medicare will pay for their medications. So temporarily she's paying out of pocket. So she figures, good RX. I'm now paying for, I will get this medication through GoodRx at Publix and that medication through GoodRx at Walgreens because it's cheaper in all of those different places. Uh-huh. And I can actually, if I do that, I'm doing the shell game now, I can stay out of the donut hole much longer if I play my cards right. So I'm looking at this and saying, okay, she's brilliant because she's actually going to be staying out of the donut hole completely the way that she's got this all figured out, but she's now also running to 5 different pharmacies, mm-hmm. and there's no one person overlooking her medications.
Right.
And I'm panicked and saying, okay, make sure you have that list of right. medications and it goes to every single doctor with you, because yes, you're saving money, but oh my gosh, you could have a drug interaction and no one's going to know about it.
Yeah.
And how many other seniors are out there doing that?
And don't get me on my little, you know, box on kind of one method of payment for all of these things. Kind of single payer system would be probably helpful for that sort of thing. Or at least caring enough for our seniors to have not a donut hole. Right.
So, that would be helpful.
You know, small steps. But I think that's really important for... you know, when the individual is left to making their medical decisions on their own or pharmaceutical decisions on their own, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yep.
And we've seen it, and I've seen it. I've been in court because of it. You know, and so there's ways to not have to do that, but it requires planning ahead of time.
Right, and it also brings home the need for maybe a case manager,
right.
because you know my mom's smart enough to be able to handle that. But that's a lot. Mm-hmm. And if someone had just a little bit of dementia, mm-hmm. how many things would be missed?
So what is a case manager? Why don't we go there just for anybody that's not aware?
So a case manager can have different roles. It could be someone who's just fiduciary, who's overseeing your bill paying, managing investments, different things, you know, making sure that you are, hopefully those care dollars are extended. And making sure that you're not being taken advantage of, which we see a lot too. But also that it could be the medical. You know, if you're not a medical person, having someone who's sitting over and looking at your medical with you, you know, my dad says as you get older, you collect doctors. So now you've got all these doctors that you're dealing with. And if you're not a medical person, how do you know? And sometimes we don't even know the questions to ask, where if you've got someone who is a medically based person to come in and overlook and say, hey, I'm worried about these two medications, or this is what we're going to be asking when you go to the hospital. Knowing that you have someone that's specifically looking for you and advocating for you really gives you peace of mind. And then sometimes they're both. Sometimes they're looking over that whole person,
right.
medical, financial, they might household, you know, they might be balancing everything for you. But and sometimes it's maybe on a month-to-month basis, just checking in and making sure. And then sometimes it's on a daily basis, you know, that if that person needs a lot of assistance.
Right. And they're contracted with you. They're not your agent through a power of attorney or healthcare surrogate or anything else like that. They're purely professional capacity to do those things, right?
Right.
All right. Well, Jennifer, is there anything else you think you want to share while we have you here?
No, I just, you know, thank you for inviting me in. This has been a great conversation, and I do encourage people to plan ahead.
All right. Well, thanks again. So, Jennifer Helen of Seniors Helping Seniors.
I hope you enjoyed this episode and my interview with Jennifer. Feel free to leave us feedback as we're a new podcast and I'd like to know what my listeners are interested in having us discuss as we continue these episodes. As always, we'll be including links to the resources and services mentioned in our interview on the firm's website, sloanhamlaw.com. Thanks also to Barbara Van, my media guru. Music provided by 50 Sounds. Until next time, I'm David Sloanham, and this is Sonnet 73.